Welcome to Talk Without Borders. I'm your host, John Petit. In this episode, I sat down with Jean Diederich. Jean is a digitalization expert and longtime advocate for Luxembourg's technological advancement. With over 30 years of experience in digital transformation, he has been at the center of pushing innovation in both the public and private sectors, advising companies and institutions on how to navigate the complexities of an increasingly digital world. In our conversation, we discussed the current state of digitalization in Luxembourg and the European Union, what's working, what isn't, and what needs to change to make them more competitive in a digital space. Then we explored his critical success factors, which could help Luxembourg close the gap with leading digital economies such as China and the United States, and provide clear instructions on how to create a more dynamic and resilient digital society. We also talked about regulation, policy adjustments to improve digital infrastructures, the necessity of reforming digital laws, and the crucial importance of digital education for both the population and the decision makers. But now, without further ado, enjoy the conversation with Jean Diederich. Hello, Jean. Welcome to my podcast.
Hello, John.
So, Jean, tell me a little bit about your expertise. So you've been around for 30 years now in Luxembourg, preaching about and engaging yourself in advancing digital infrastructure in Luxembourg. So how did you get into that lane?
I studied, so I'm not a digital native, but I studied already IT, ICT, digitalization long time ago. And then I worked as a consultant in France for 5 years, designing software, structuring databases, different abstract layers, methodologies to define and specify software. At the time in France was very popular Maurice. So we were experts in that because that was done at university in Aix-en-Provence where I studied. And so we had some of the professors who were the initiators of this methodology. Then, as you said, 30 years ago, I came back to Luxembourg. I started a startup within the IBM group. At that time, that was called IBM Global Services because IBM until then was not really in the service business. So I started that in Luxembourg with people who have a mindset of mainframes and AS/400 and no software culture. Later, I moved to a large US outsourcing company called EDS, Electronic Data Systems in Dallas, Texas. So I was 2 years with them. And of course, for them, it was only about big things for big guys. And Luxembourg is a small country. So we have limited big things and limited big guys. Mm-hmm. So I said it's a good experience. But in the actual context of the new administration in the US, I better understand what's going on because already, let's say 25 years ago, I was live with this kind of people. Mm-hmm. And so the mindset is familiar to me. I'm not shocked about it.
So when you say big guys for big people, what do you mean by that?
That means that these people are much interested in big deals. Meaning at that time we did outsourcing. So, and in the US they had a team, they called it already at the time. That was around, I would say, 99, 2000. Mm-hmm. They called it the billionaire deal team, meaning the guys, they were only working on a deal, 1 billion and more.
Okay. Sure.
So, of course, I was the small fish from Luxembourg. I went there every 2 or 3 months. Mm-hmm. And of course, in Luxembourg, we had also some sales objectives, meaning if you do a 50 million contract in Luxembourg, that is very, very big.
For America, that's a small fish.
I would say for Texas.
So. Okay. All right. Even more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I think Texas is not the America. Europe knows mostly New York, San Francisco, LA.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And then I would say then the European culture is over.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. America is very big, has very different states and cultures, and so that you can definitely be surprised how divergent it is. So, okay, so going back to your experience, so basically you spend quite a lot of time in the US as an entrepreneur.
Europe, Europe and
then
US. Some,
and then yes. In the US, and then build your knowledge, and then you came back to Luxembourg. Is that correct?
I was traveling between the US at that time and Luxembourg, but I was mainly responsible for Luxembourg.
Okay.
But then I moved into consulting, where I had different jobs, and then I think the click to push what we said at that time, the dot-com business in Luxembourg, arrived around 2000 when I was with EDS. And I remember I was at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport buying a book, reading it on the flight back, I think, to Brussels. And I said, I have to do something for Luxembourg because they are very sleepy and they do nothing. And so at that time, I was defining something you can even find still on the Paper Jam website. I think I published it in June 2000 during a meeting. I think the website is saying 2001, but the real date is June 2000. So it's now 25 years soon. And it was the 10 critical success factors to make Luxembourg a dot-com nation, what I would call today a digital nation, with the more modern terminology we have nowadays. And so the idea was to give 10 principles at that time to the Juncker government in order to say, meaning digitalization is real. The US, they have a vice president who is very digital minded. They will push it. Meaning now 25 years later, it's very clear when you look at the Nasdaq and the stock exchange and the tech billionaires that in 25 years, this was a dream, but it became a very big reality with a lot of money and with a lot of dominance, digital dominance in the world, but also mainly in Europe.
Okay, so I read your critical factors, as you call them, and one of them says that you would like to see Luxembourg as another, or Europe, or the region around Luxembourg as another Silicon Valley. So how are we doing so far on that goal that you postulated somewhat 20 years ago?
Meaning the idea is still the same. Luxembourg is small. Nowadays, we are around 650,000. But if we take the greater region, we are probably around 5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's already something really on the world map that counts.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the ecosystems, they are built also on greater regions. Meaning you take New York, it's not only Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
You have also New Jersey and other regions around. So
sure.
It's the same. Okay, you will argue with me, it's the same country. Yes, but we are surrounded by three other countries. But these countries, as we know, have a good collaboration with Luxembourg because we have every day around 240,000 commuters coming to Luxembourg, around 100,000 from France. So I can say that this is becoming more and more a reality. And for a long time, the Luxembourg government was very afraid, I would say, in trying to speak about the region because they were afraid of the French, the Germans, perhaps less on the Belgians, really, that they would say, but stay at home. Don't come to Metz, don't come to Trier, to Saarbrücken, to Arlon, stay in Luxembourg. And I think it's now something I think is getting better, but is still really underdeveloped. And if we look at the digital resources, Luxembourg has not educated many. Mm-hmm. Most of our resources came 20, 25 years ago when I was setting up this from the greater region. Because I studied in France, so I know the education around digitalization in France was already existing 25 years ago. In Luxembourg, we have been nowhere. There's been no education. In Belgium, it was existing.
Mm-hmm.
In Germany, it was existing. So from that perspective, anyhow, we have built what we have achieved, anyhow, with the support of the greater region.
So if I understand you correctly, are you saying that we should cooperate more with our neighboring regions in Germany, France, when it comes to digitalizing our society and our business sector?
Yes, I think it's very important. Now, the question is always when you are a civil servant in Luxembourg, the problem is the KPIs are how many startups are in Luxembourg. And when you have some in Metz or in Trier or in Saarbrücken or in Arlon, it will not count on the Luxembourg accounting, but on the French, German, and Belgian. So as a such, these people are trying just to look, to their KPIs around our frontiers. And this is something, I think the ecosystem is much larger. And we should have collaboration agreements with all these governments, as we are trying to do also now, for example, for telework. Because many of the IT people, they want to do telework because they know how to use technology, that something's become the standard. And we have then again these funny problems with social security, with tax and so on. So globally speaking, we have to handle this as a unified Europe, meaning when you listen to the European politics, they speak about unified. When you dig into the details, and Luxembourg is a good example, because it's us with three other EU members, it's not true. We are not unified. There is a lot of, I would say, hidden animosity on the different sides because everybody is selfish and everybody tries to make the best out of itself, not looking at the broader picture of collaboration.
Just sticking with Luxembourg for a second here and the current state of digitalization in Luxembourg. So there is a report that came out a few months ago, which you're very familiar with, the digital competitiveness ranking, and Luxembourg was classed 29th in that ranking. So what can you say about that? What is that? Is that a good ranking? Are we doing good? Are we doing bad? Where are we right now in terms of digitalization?
I think it's not a good ranking. That's for sure. We could do much better. But I think the worst of all this is that there is one element in that that's saying, what's our future evolution? And there we are even worse, which means that the message here is we are not on the side where it goes up. Mm-hmm. We are on the side where it goes down. Mm-hmm. We are losing competition every day. That's what that report is saying. Meaning you find all the people who listen to us, you can find the detailed analysis on the website of the Chambre de Commerce, where this is analyzed in detail and where things are also put in the light of the actual situation in Luxembourg. We cannot be proud of that. Now, the question is why we are on the downside of it. That's the main question. The private sector, but also the government administrations have to respond to that.
So why are we down spiraling or going downwards?
It's because we depend more and more on actors who are not in Luxembourg, which means that digitalization is not anymore done in Luxembourg. There are different factors to that. Luxembourg has, I remember when I was publishing these 10 critical success factors for Luxembourg, I would say 5-6 years later, there was a minister called Jean-Louis Schiltz who finally decided to do something against the monopoly of post on everything which is fiber, data centers, and so on, and to create LuxConnect. And since then, there has been always the craziness that Luxembourg has to invest in infrastructure, in fiber, in data centers. I'm not against it, but a data center to me is not something digital. You create a supermarket at the closed door, or you create a data center at the closed door. It's always land, concrete, heating, cooling. On one side, you put computers with chips and hard disks. On the other side, you put, tomatoes and bananas. So it's an infrastructure, but it's not because you have an infrastructure like this that you are digital. What is missing in Luxembourg in last 25 years that Luxembourg was massively investing in creating solutions to its business? If you look at the financial center, we are one of the largest in Europe. And I would say we have close to zero softwares made in Luxembourg. We had in the past, for example, a software called Odyssey AAA, which was partially Luxembourg, partially Switzerland, but there was a part in Luxembourg. It was bought by Temenos, and so the software is also now non-Luxembourg. Generally speaking, we have not invested in software for our banking sector, for our private wealth management sector, for payments. We have not much. We have one or two startups. For the fund industry, for example, there's a lot of software missing. There are some startups now creating some software, but this is only in the last 3-4 years since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But in the last 25 years, not much was done, which means that we depend completely. The hardware is not from Luxembourg, is mostly not from Europe, is from the US. The operating systems are mostly not from Europe and, of course, not from Luxembourg, mostly from the US. Mm-hmm. Then most of the software bricks are also from the US, like databases, languages like Java, whatever, is mostly was born in the US. Some open source is European. And then we have one only European champion is SAP. With their software, which is global, but sure. Which is also doing a lot in the US. But beyond SAP, I think in Europe, there is not much left. And so in Luxembourg, that's my idea. In the last 10 years, we should have companies investing much more money in creating solutions in the cloud. They would sell to the startups, to the small and medium businesses, because the problem is also in Luxembourg, as we are a small country, we have also many small companies. And these companies, as the European studies and Euro studies saying, are lagging behind in digitalization. We have to do something for our small and medium businesses, and especially for the micro enterprises. On the top of that, the European regulation is killing the small and medium business and the micro enterprises, because they have not the competencies. They don't have the money to implement all this NIS2 and everything, DORA, whatever. You dream about it. There are so many regulations. And then people are saying to me, yeah, but they don't have to apply. Yes, they have to apply. Why? Because many of these small and medium enterprises or micro enterprises, they are subcontractors to larger companies. And the larger companies will force them to do that. Otherwise, they will not work anymore with them. So, which means that a cascade of consequences of the European regulations from big companies to small and medium and micro enterprises who will starve. They will be dead because it's not adapted. And you need digital solutions for these people that in the future they could, let's say, run in a digital accounting, invoicing, payments, and so on. Meaning, you see big ASBLs who have issues getting money stolen, banks not reacting, and then disappearing of millions and millions. That's a question of non-digitalization.
So that's quite interesting. Let me break this down, because obviously a very complicated issue. So I want to break it down in two parts from my understanding. So first, I think you said part of the problem is that in Luxembourg, we have no hardware, no software, no operating systems that are actually from Luxembourg. And we have huge...
From Europe.
From Europe. So we have huge data centers, but those are essentially vessels, like you described. So they're there. But there's no innovation that comes directly, or very little, I want to say, probably not none, but very little innovation coming from Luxembourg and from Europe itself. So we're basically borrowing all our ideas and software and hardware and operating systems from the US. Means we probably also, I would assume, have a lack of talent or skilled people that can do these kinds of things and jobs. And then I think the second one was the regulation, right? So I think the regulation is also something that I think from your description that hinders the progress in terms of digitalization. Is that a correct summary?
Regulation, by definition, is a legal process of doing laws, which mm-hmm. are always done looking at the past. It's the same in the financial center. When there's a crisis, then there's a lot of laws are making to avoid the crisis of the past. Mm-hmm. But all these laws, they don't prevent the issues of the future. The same with digitalization. We regulate the past, but we do nothing for the future. And as we regulated the past when it's too late, we are hindering the evolution of the companies because they spend all their money, the digital companies, the financial institutions, in running all this. Meaning, if you look at the ABBL, they all complain that 20-30% of their fees are linked to regulation, to compliance, and all this. This is a huge amount. As a consequence, European financial institutions are no more interesting for shareholders. Do you want to invest in a company which has so huge fees? Because the shareholder value at the end is not very high. So you are looking for alternative investments, which means that people don't want to invest in something which is too regulated, too limited, and which costs a hell of money for results. We don't know how efficient they could be.
So there seems to be a growing concern in the business world, and I read it a lot, or when you go to LinkedIn or you talk to people, this growing concern that Europe seems to be over-regulated, or the European Union, the European Commission, they're drafting too many laws, too many regulations. I mean, one recent example is the AI Act that was released a few months ago, right? It's another point. So is that the case, that Europe is over-regulated? And if so, what can be done about it?
I would define it the way it is now. America is market-driven. Mm-hmm. China is government-driven. And Europe is regulated-driven. Yes. Why? Because we are 27, it's not homogeneous, so everybody wants to regulate the other in the European Union. There is no spirit of a common single market, as you can read at the website of the Commission. I'm saying nothing new. Mm-hmm. The digital market doesn't really exist. We have a euro. We have some, let's say, global domains like finance regulation with the European Banking Authority, where the CSSF in Luxembourg falls on, the BaFin in Germany, the ACPR in France. Mm. Okay, but this is why the regulation is so big. But then you look other sectors like medicine. There is no global European regulation, meaning every country is responsible for it. And we have seen under the pandemic that this is not very positive. We have even regulations like Schengen, which are now not working anymore because the Germans, they control at the borders. So they don't respect anymore what they have signed years ago. So I would even say we are in a negative tendency towards the single market and common European practices. That's something which is very bad for Europe because we don't look united. Meaning, we have this war in Ukraine, we have been disconnected from Russia, which is a big neighbor. And on the other side, now there's a possibility with the Trump administration, and I think it's clearly done, that we are also now disconnected from Washington, which means that we are the little kids on the block in the middle. And yeah, we are a little bit isolated. We have given a lot of lessons to many people about democracy, free speech, innovation, regulation, AI, digitalization. But if we look at the results, and we compare us to the US or to China, our results are very small.
So you said if we look at the results, and so are you saying that this regulation-driven governance is going to lead us to isolation, meaning as we go down the road, if we continue down this road, we will be more and more isolated and become less competitive, especially in the digital sector, right?
The question is a question of how you regulate. Europe has regulated in the last 10 years, I would call it in a way like the US, unilateral. Meaning, for example, we have the dominance of three hyperscalers from the US. We can name them Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, and Google Cloud. In Europe, we have not much. We have OVH in France. We have some. I would say not nothing, but not much. Compared to the three hyperscalers,
it's comparatively small,
Yeah, very small. And so we depend on them. Then, of course, we regulate the cloud, which means that we do a regulation for Europe of cloud providers from the US. And these cloud providers are under the law of the United States because they are at the stock exchange and they must be conform with US law. And the US law is saying when the US government asks you for data, you have to deliver the data. Yeah. If the data is in Europe, we don't care. You give us the data. And Europe is doing unilateral, saying we have to protect the geography and all this. And then you are in a situation where what you regulate, you don't manage because you are not the owner of the solution. Meaning Europe is very good in regulating solutions done by other nations outside Europe. And that's very bad because you don't. It's a dream, you know, you regulate something like social media. It's the same with Facebook and all this. We regulate social media. We regulate X, but then when Musk is doing interviews with Trump or with the AfD, then Brussels is not pushing the button and saying, okay, we have the data. No, nothing happens. So then you look, when you have regulations and you don't apply them, you look very funny. And very weak. And that's where Europe gives a very bad image because better not having this regulation so you don't have to apply them and show you are weak. But if you do it on the text and the law and then there's no execution behind, then it's totally useless.
I was not aware of this. So you are actually saying that we have regulations, but we're not enforcing them.
Yes.
So that's even worse, you say, than having no regulation at all.
Yes.
Okay,
because you look really stupid.
Okay, so because you think it makes us look weak in front of, let's say, the US, so they'll feel that they can just walk all over us, I would assume, is the idea.
Of course.
Then what is the thinking in terms of this regulation? Why wouldn't Brussels just say, let's just get rid of the regulation? What's holding them back?
No, but they said now, meaning the old von der Leyen Commission was regulating like crazy. Mm-hmm. Now, the new von der Leyen 2.0 is saying they're getting rid, I don't know, of how many regulations.
Uh-huh.
I have not really seen, but they published. You can read on the internet, on the page of the commission. That's their intention. They have even a committee how to reduce the regulatory burden, something like this. Meaning, no, that's now the idea they have. So they were first surfing to the North Pole. Now they are surfing to the South Pole. And it's always the same people. That's also something which, again, we look very stupid because, which means that we keep the same people and they surf in one direction, in the other one. That's not serious, meaning that means that we don't know where we are and where we go, especially in digitalization. Meaning, I was last Tuesday in Paris,
the AI Action Summit. Yeah.
And what we see there is very clear that we are in a very complicated situation. I published a note on LinkedIn where I was defining, from my perspective, the 5 points looking at the AI summit where Europe is really behind and we have to become, from my perspective, very realistic. Can I go for them?
Please do. Please elaborate on the 5 points that you made.
Okay, 5 most important EU issues I have identified concerning AI. I have spoken to many people, even the Canadians, Australians have been in Paris because, of course, now, let's say, with the behavior of the new Trump administration, of course, they are also afraid. Mm-hmm. And they try to come together with Europe to make a defense. As you know, also, the Vice President G.D. Vance was in Paris, and mm-hmm. he was also speaking up about the American dominance in AI and the new strategy. I think the $500 billion President Trump wants to invest. Mm-hmm. So in Europe, now Macron said that we will invest, I think, 100 or 200 billion.
200 billion.
200 billion. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But the issue is, you know, it's like building a house. You don't start with the swimming pool. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we are speaking about the swimming pool, but we don't have a garage. We don't have a foundation and we should build it. and that's mm-hmm. my 5 points. So the first point.
So just before you start, so you're worried that we are pumping in 200 billion euros into something where we don't have the infrastructure to actually make something yes. useful. Okay, go ahead. Yes,
that's exactly my idea on that. So the first point, if AI is consuming a lot of electricity, mm-hmm. non-competitive energy prices for computer power, that is for me the first issue, because all these specific AI chips, they consume a lot of electricity. And what was funny, and again, not showing that Europe is united, is the French Minister of Economy was speaking and he was saying, you are all welcome to come to France. We have very cheap, reliable electricity from atomic sources. Okay, atomic power plants.
True.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's true. But
very,
the Germans,
very old school. Yeah, the Germans have banned all their power plants.
Exactly. So yes, it's true. I think it's the only solution in Europe, because all the others, especially Germany, Luxembourg is very much under the German umbrella on energy. Mm. So we are a little bit lost on that. And our green parties under Gambia 1 and 2, of course, they didn't want to speak about atomic power plants. But for the moment, with the price going up and with the consumption of AI, I don't see how you can get around. Meaning, again, I'm not a fan of that. But we will not get alternative energy for cheap price in the next 5 to 10 years. So we have to survive. Mm-hmm. Now, killing the economy and having nothing to replace what you have killed, that's, I think, very stupid.
Yes.
The second is we depend, as I said before, on US cloud hyperscalers. And this is also creating an issue of digital sovereignty for Luxembourg and for Europe. You know, AI is just working with data. And if you don't have the data, or the data is not protected, your AI perhaps is not so performing.
So you're saying that that for the data sovereignty, you meaning that we don't really own much of the data, but we're just governing
and
it for somebody
we
else.
Own,
we're
we
just
put
doing
it
for
the
somebody
sovereign
else.
Cloud.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Voilà. That's the for me the second point. Then we have a huge delay in the digitalization of our industries, of our banks, public administration, hospitals, and so on. Meaning, mm-hmm. you look at Luxembourg, we have 4 main hospitals, and the 4 have different IT systems, different data structures, different softwares. There's no interoperability in little Luxembourg. You can imagine this at the level of Germany or France. So it's very difficult. You have now two possibilities. You create a very complicated interoperability model, post-software implementation, or you restart from scratch and moving everything in the same software for everybody with the same structure of data. I don't know if someone's capable of taking one of these decisions, but these decisions have to be taken, should have been already taken 10 years ago.
But
then
to that,
we would have the data of 10 years already.
So to that point, you mentioned the hospitals as an example. Are other countries doing a better job in terms of aligning software systems interoperability in Germany or France, or is it a general problem in the region?
What I heard is a general problem.
Okay.
You have some regions who have, of course, because it's much bigger than Luxembourg, where different hospitals owned by the same, let's say, region have the same structure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But mostly it's not coherent. Mm-hmm. It's different. That's my third point. So we have a problem of digitalization, mm-hmm. structuring data and so on. So we don't have the ingredients for the AI model. Then number 4 is incoherent, as we said before, overregulation that is also blocking us. Why? Because if you have an overregulation around data, the data is not available, and so AI is not possible to apply.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So even if we would have the data, the regulation would block us. Okay, and all this is also very, very bad for small and medium businesses who mostly are not digitalized, so who can deliver zero data on their business and what's going on. And mm-hmm. don't forget, Europe probably is based on 80% of its business, of the economy, is small and medium enterprises. Mm-hmm. Okay? So you are not getting anything out of that. And then the last one, for me, I think some people will not be happy what I will say here, is the digital uneducation of decision makers who are, to my taste, very old school style. Mm-hmm. And that's making it not good. Look, for example, in the administrations. How many people have a digital education in Luxembourg? Not much. You have to go to the Centre Informatique de l'État.
What would you classify as digital education? What do you mean by
digital
that?
Education is people who have studied programming, designing of systems, process reengineering, mm-hmm. so on, meaning you have a clue. How can you speak in Luxembourg for the last 15, 20 years, we speak about simplification administrative? Mm-hmm. I have not seen much of it, I have to say, but perhaps I go not there where it happens. Mm-hmm. But perhaps you know where it happens. It would be good that you tell me. I will visit the simplification administrative.
I have as much information on that as you do.
Okay. Yeah. So we would say it's very weak. But mm-hmm. one of the points is also because on the regulation side of the administration, many laws have to be changed because the laws have not been written in a way that digitalization can happen later, which means that now you want to bring in digitalization, you have completely to review the laws with a view to digitalize the process. Mm-hmm. That has not been done.
So I'm going to offer my opinion on this, but obviously I'm not as knowledgeable as you. But it seems to me, looking in Luxembourg, that there seems to be a lot of saying things, but not so much doing things. So there might be a lot of, we're going to do this, we're becoming this entrepreneurial wonderland. We're going to become so digitally, our infrastructure is going to be amazing. But you don't actually see any movement or any progress. So is that something that you see as well? Or?
Yes, but we are coming back to my point where I said old school and uneducated, mm-hmm. meaning talking the walk is easy. Walking the talk is very difficult because you need the expertise. We don't have. Look at, if you go back to my 10 critical success factors 25 years ago, I said we have to do something on education. But you look at the Luxembourg primary school, that is very weak what they do with our children.
Yeah, so it starts really early.
No, they offer them iPads and where there is a dematerialized and piece of paper. But this is not digitalization. And then they are saying now the kids, they don't have any smartphones and all this is very bad. Of course, if kids are looking 8 hours a day, the smartphone is very bad. Why? Because we educate our kids in being digital consumers. Like our adult people in Luxembourg are very good digital consumers. Meaning, you look, people in their job, they don't want to digitalize the administration, their bank, their industry, their hospital. But on the other side, the same people, they are using digital platforms to order books in Amazon, to order hotels in Bookings, to reserve flights on Opodo, and so on and so on. Which means that Luxembourg is uneducated in producing digital, but very educated in consuming digital. And there's a big difference between that. For example, I see with my daughter, she's in the last class of primary school. Of course, there is nothing that happens to teach her what's going on. Mm-hmm. But so I registered her now in the coding course, and I said, listen, you are playing this game, but this game, there is a programmer behind. Mm-hmm. And sure. I want you to become the programmer, that you program a game, you test with your girlfriends and friends, and then you see how good or how bad you are, and you understand how it works. And when you change the perspective from a consumer to a producer, then, of course, digital is getting much more understandable for the kids, and they do also something intelligent for their future, because their future will be whatever we think. will be digital. So taking away now the smartphones from our kids is an error again of all these anti-digital people who don't understand because they are not educated. It's a question of you have to teach them. You have to guide them. You have to bring up the production of a digital application to be useful for our society. Then the kids will understand and they stop being just, like our adults, stupid digital platform consumers.
So it seems to me like there is a culture problem where you call them those, you know, uninformed people that are not well-versed in digital strategies or digital software and so on. It seems to me like an easy fix. It's, well, you go to the education minister and you tell them, look, we need more classes, we need more courses that, you know, talk about programming or anything else related, coding, what you just mentioned, anything else related to digital infrastructure. But is there maybe some ego problem too, that there's no willingness to change? So, I mean, now we're just speculating, but I'm thinking to myself, what is the actual reason that we are so stuck and not jumping on this like other places do?
My view is we have a minister who is trying to do its best, but the minister is not the teacher. I think the issue is that our teachers don't have an education in digitalization, programming, and all this. So even if the minister and, I don't know, everybody with the lobbying of the private sector, we want to introduce digitalization, programming, everything in primary school and high school, we don't have the teachers. We would have to start what I said 25 years ago, teach the teachers. That never happened. 25 years ago, there were a lot of problems on getting a working permit for non-Europeans in Luxembourg in IT. At that time, I said, bring them in. I remember when Xavier Bettel became prime minister around 2013-14, I had a discussion with him. I said, Xavier, bring every year 500 to 1,000 Ukrainians to Luxembourg who have a digital education, who produce 40,000 IT people every year in 2014, 2015, 10 years
ago. What did he say?
No, you and your Ukrainians. Okay. Mm-hmm. Later, when the war arrived in 22, the Ukrainians came to Luxembourg. What we don't have, many of these Ukrainians who are coders, programmers, they stay in Poland, for example, because they do outsourcing there and it's more closer to Ukraine. But this is something, you know, you would have imported these people. You could educate and teach our teachers, and our teachers would become performing. And when our teachers are performing, our children will perform. Mm-hmm. It's a cascade. But if you never launch the cascade and you just say, we have a politics of this and that, it doesn't bring any results.
So you're saying start early in the schools. That could be a step toward, you know, becoming better in the digital space.
Yes, because all the nations who are now leaders in digitalization, they start very early. It's the same like in sports, you know. If you want to become a good tennis professional, starting at 25 is too late, you know. And here is exactly the same. But we have some programs in Luxembourg, launched the Luxembourg Tech School. We have lifelong learning for the people who didn't succeed it during the traditional learning course of primary school, perhaps high school, or to become a butcher or something. And then they really think at 25 or 30, I want to earn more money. I want to become now a coder. Mm-hmm. Of course, at 25, 30, you know, it's very late to become a superstar in coding, because the superstars in coding, mostly you detect them at 15, not at 35. So it's like in tennis, meaning it's the same. You detect them at 15, not at 25 or 30. It's too late.
But isn't that changing as well? Because right now, with the advancement of AI, we have a lot of low coding platforms. Just a little explanation for the audience. Low coding means that, you know, the AI is going to take a big part of the programming or coding for you. It's going to basically offer you a template. And there's even things where you don't have to code anymore at all. So do you think that's going to change how many people are getting into coding with the advancement of AI in that space?
If you know what you do, this is a very good solution.
Okay.
If you don't know what you do, you don't know what's going on in the generated coding of ChatGPT or DeepSeek or whatever. Mm-hmm. You don't know. You cannot judge about it. It's always the question of expertise. So when people are saying AI will replace people, it will replace the low level of low level of people because there's no added value.
For now.
Yeah. But we need more and more experts who can judge that first, that the data source of the AI is good enough and is not wrong, because then the AI will generate everything wrong. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you say to the AI to do an accounting, but the accounting rules in the AI agent are wrong. So it will make a wrong accounting. It's always the same garbage in, garbage out.
So are you saying we should, there should be skilled people that regulate AI?
Not regulate.
Not regulate.
Why? Because I think that's, again, I think another European error of our regulators. And where I fully agree is, meaning OpenAI is called OpenAI because the initial idea was to make it open source. Mm-hmm. Why you make it open source? To have the code available publicly. Everybody can read the code. Everybody can see the algorithms. Everybody can see how it works. Mm-hmm. So you have an audit right from the beginning of how it works. Then what happened is that Altman was closing that idea down. They have been in court with Elon Musk because Elon Musk wanted to keep it open. You can look, and they have been in court. You see now DeepSeek in China is open source.
Just for context for the audience, so OpenAI is, ChatGPT is basically, was created by OpenAI, which is a company founded by Sam Altman, which you were referring to, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
So, and that is exactly the idea. You don't have to regulate something which anyhow the regulator doesn't understand. And if the AI engine is closed, then it's very difficult because you cannot understand how it works. Mm-hmm. That's why it would be much more easy to say an AI agent has to be open source.
Sure.
For example, you ask the banks if they have an advisor tool for investments, publish the algorithm of your advisor tool. So everybody can look how it works, and then everybody can understand if it's good or not. Mm-hmm. Or you hire an expert who tells you exactly how it works. You could get a podcast who will explain all this, but then people would in a transparent way see it. So it's completely stupid regulating something you don't understand. And then the regulator is saying you have to publish your algorithms. But ask them to have it open source. It's published by default. Mm-hmm. And when there is a change, the new source code of the new version will be always published. It's very easy. I don't understand all this complication of all these people. And again, we are coming back to my conclusion because they are uneducated digital people that they do it the wrong way.
Okay, so, you know, obviously, you know, you talk about a lot of different aspects and, like you mentioned, so from your perspective, right? So we have some regulatory reforms to do. We need a better education, better training to have a more digitally skilled workforce. But if you were to look ahead, let's say 5 to 10 years, what would you like to see where we, Luxembourg or even Europe or the greater region, where we are in 10 years? So what would be your, let's say, what would be your best case scenario and what would be your worst case scenario?
We have to do the change in our education system. That's the number one. Mm-hmm. We missed already the last generation, which is not digital because, as I said, the teachers are not able to teach digitalization. We have two high schools. One has, I don't know, 25 people in AI and 25 people in cybersecurity, which is the other aspect. That's not good enough, meaning we need hundreds and hundreds. And so what's happening is, if you speak to the people of the ADEM, they are saying that now in the last, I don't know, 1-2 years, you can read that also in some newspapers, there are more and more IT people on chômage in Luxembourg.
Mm-hmm. Unemployment,
of course, unemployment. That is because many of the groups who are not headquartered in Luxembourg, they decide not to do digitalization in Luxembourg, but somewhere else. And Luxembourg becomes then also the stupid user of the software developed somewhere else. And that is the case of the banking groups, of the private equity groups, of the fund industry, and so on. So in a way, we are not only disconnected by not having a cloud, we are also disconnected in not being seen as the good place where digitalization should happen, because we don't have the people. You look, for example, at Amazon. Amazon is doing translation in Luxembourg. They have human resource, they have accounting, VAT, tax, and so on. There are many people in Luxembourg, but not so many coders. You look at PayPal. PayPal is doing regulation. They have the banking license in Luxembourg, AML, KYC. But the payment engines and the wallets of PayPal are not in Luxembourg.
But it's basically only administration.
Exactly. So that is something we have not addressed in the last 25 years since I was publishing this critical success factors, because that was my aim, to wake our politics up and say, guys, you have to change. This didn't happen. Will it happen now? I don't know.
That was going to be my question. Is all hope lost, or do you still see a path towards your goal that you initially postulated in the early 2000s?
You know what these people say to me, but Jean, you are frustrated.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah, I can feel the frustration, yes, sometimes.
But it's not really a frustration. It's about helping the country to become better. Mm-hmm. So if the people don't want to do it, why should I be frustrated? Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, I never give up. That's mm-hmm. my mentality and my character. So I will continue to battle that this will happen, mm-hmm. even after 25 years. If I would be frustrated, I would have said, I go on the beach in Thailand and do whatever you want. I'm no more interested in a cocktail or two.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not my mentality. I continue, you know, I have been to Paris. I'm still president of APSI. I'm member of Digital Europe. I'm member of the ABBL. So I'm still active in all this. And I would say that what I said 25 years was not completely wrong. Some of the things I said have happened, but many of the things have not happened. And one of them is the education, mm-hmm. which is a very important point.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that this can be changed? I think, I would probably say that that is something that we can do, because all you have to do is start at the high schools, the primary schools, and just introduce more classes and more curriculum and more education on all these topics related to digital. So it seems to me like that's an easy fix, or maybe I'm just... Or not
it's an easy fix.
It's maybe not an easy fix, but it's a very logical step to take, in my opinion. And then you explained it really well.
If you fixed it 25 years, you would have the results already in the last 10 years.
Sure.
Because this cycle takes 15 years, mm-hmm. at least.
Yeah.
So if we start now, we can expect some results in 15 years. Mm-hmm. Then the question is that too late? I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know that.
I tried to make you look into the crystal ball, but I understand, yeah.
Yes. So that is the thing, that the cycles are long. The more you lose time in Luxembourg, the more you lose time in Europe, the more it's impossible to say what will happen, and the crystal ball will not help. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we need to educate more people. But we have also to manage our startup ecosystem in a different way. We have now a startup ecosystem. I'm very happy. I was an elected member of Chambre de Commerce when we helped at that time the creation of the House of Startups and the Loft and all this. I think the idea was good. It was good doing it. We have now many startups. Now, I think two things I was always saying to these people. First is critical mass. Critical mass in a small country needs, you have to define your priorities and your niches. Otherwise, you go nowhere. Mm-hmm. You have to concentrate some sectors like cybersecurity or digital banking in some incubators, and not having two or three startups in one incubator, three and and four in other incubator and having them all over the place. I don't think it's a good thing. So you have to concentrate them and specialize the different incubators. And you have to be very selective. The second point is, if you look at the startups, I don't know, I heard we have around 600. Mm-hmm. I think probably 450 are close to that. Okay? They have no chance to come up ever with a result.
So we and really have 150?
Less.
Even less.
Yes. Yeah. 100, and there is already many bads inside. We have probably 20 to 30 which are good.
Competitive okay. startups.
Yeah, yeah, it's 5% of the 600.
Okay.
It's not many. But so we have then again the problem of our culture where failure is very bad and nobody should fail because, and so we keep then the startup under blood transfusion for 5 years. And there will be never a result. And if you cut it 5 years before, these guys, they have a good experience and expertise. They have built and learned. They could have already started a new startup and being successful 5 years later. But as you keep them in the loser cycle, they will not get out of it. That's a problem.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you have an ecosystem that is growing with more and more non-performing startups.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's something. So, focus on niches, create critical mass, and second, disconnect the ones who will not make it. It's not a scandal. Give them the chance to restart a new startup.
But that's again, and I think that's also a PR move, I want to say, by the government, right? They're going to say, look how many startups we have. You know, so they can just say, look, we have 600 startups, but in reality, you know, over 400 of them are almost insolvent or they're not growing. So essentially, it's more of a lip service again, right? Instead of focusing on how can we actually improve the efficiency of the good startups we have, we just focus on volume, it seems to me, and not on the ones that are actually performing.
Yeah, but this is an error. And for example, I can give you a concrete example. In 2019, we were running a study on how many startups we have in cybersecurity in Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. You can find it on PaperJam. If you look 2019, type my name is cybersecurity and so on, you will find. And we have at that time found 15 startups in Luxembourg where you can call them Luxembourg startup with some substance in Luxembourg with some developers and so on, 15. Then I think 4 or 5 months later, Ministry of Economy, they were creating startup map of cybersecurity, and you found 320.
Okay.
I still have the map. But out of the 320, there are 300 who are not startups because some are consulting firms, some they delegate CISOs, nothing to do with a startup. So this is again very bad because you give the image that you have much more in cyber than you really have.
Mm-hmm.
And then when people come to Luxembourg, they observe very quickly what is really going on. Because if they take the list of the 320, what I have done, you can point them and you can look at the website, how many exist, what they really do, and that they are not part of a cybersecurity ecosystem. Mine 15 in 2019, the question is, I have not redone this study. Are we today at 10 or 12, or are we at 20 or 25? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is a very interesting development. I'm really curious to see how we're going to do in terms of hopefully improving efforts to become more digital, to close the gap, I want to say, to other big players such as the US. I think that's really important that we don't lose in that race. I think we need to keep up. I hope that you keep up the enthusiasm and the good work for the next, you know, at least 20 years. I don't know. And hopefully we can make some progress in the future.
Yes, we will do. Meaning perhaps as a summary on this, we have some very good startups raised in Luxembourg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For example, one in the cloud computing, I believe very much, they have raised last year 17 million. That's Emma. Then you have Salonkey. I think they were getting 7 million to go to the US. And you have many more. So we have some who are doing a great job, who are backed up by the investors and who have a lot of substance in Luxembourg, and they do a good job. Perhaps we have 10, 12 like this. But I tell you honestly, I prefer, as Little Luxembourg say, I have 12 superstars, and everybody say, wow, that's real good. And not saying I have 300, and then people are looking, they say, oh, what a disaster. There's nothing behind, that's not working, there is no future for most of them. And then people are concentrating on the wrong actors who are very weak. And you are diluting the good actors and frustrating them because you are not putting them on the spot.
No, I agree. That's definitely, I think, a priority that we should do. Yes, well, thank you very much. I wish you good luck with your efforts to increase awareness for digitalization. I think it's very worth it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.